So before this trip, I designed the cable bundle assembly station. This station include a cable bundling fixture and also a cable spool rack. The main components of the cable bundling fixture is the 8 feet long tube. And on the tube, we preload the cable sleeve, compress the sleeve on this tube and preload it. And so when the cables are put through this tube, and the sleeve is also drawn along with them. And so this will apply the sleeve onto the cables and to form a cable bundle. The cable spool rack is positioned right in front of this cable bundling fixture to help organize the individual cables. There are some machined parts for this cable bundling fixture. Before this trip, we fabricate this machined part at the B&L. And this machined part include a cable inlet funnel block. And the cables will be fed into the tube through this funnel block. And also include two sleeve guide rollers, and also its support structure. The sleeve application tube, this one, I asked CSU to have order from CSU and deliver directly to CSU, so I don't have to bring this tube with me. And the other machine part I brought with me for this trip, so we can set up the entire fixture quickly at the CSU. This is with all these machined parts, and then we set up the bundling fixture at B&L, and I tried to preload the cable sleeve onto this 8 foot long tube. It found that 126 feet long sleeve can be compressed and preloaded onto this 8 feet long tube. And that length was later confirmed at the CSU test to be sufficient to cover the entire cable bundle. So that's why we select the 8 feet long as the length of the tube. I made three designs for the cable spool racks. And in fact, in the first two designs, some simple brake mechanism was included to prevent the spools from rolling on its own. And but when I made some prototype at B&L, I find that this brake design is not always reliable. So that's why I removed this brake design, the brake mechanism in the third design. The reason for that is since the rod passing through the center hole of the spools actually is much smaller than the center hole of the spool. So I thought this eccentric alignment between the spool and the rod will prevent the spool from rolling by itself. But however, during the CSU test, we found that some brake mechanism is indeed necessary. And these are some prototypes of the cable spool racks we made at B&L. And this is we wind the cable on the individual spool. And, this is some the simple brake mechanism I initially designed. Is this block is to it is use the rubber band is spring loaded with the rubber band. So if I remove this rubber band and this block will push against on the tabs on the spool, it will stop the spool from rolling. And also, if we want to roll the spools on the other direction, and the spool will have to overcome the spring force from the rubber band. But when I tried a couple of times, you find that as these tabs on the spool is not sticking out too much. It's not sticking out enough. So sometimes this will miss this the tabs on the spool. So that's why it doesn't work always reliable. So I eliminate this in the third design. And this is the cable bundle assembly station we set up at the CSU with help from the CSU team. And on this rack, you see this all the individual cables have already been wound onto the cable spools. And you see this cable bundling fixture is right positioned in front of this cable spool rack. And this picture shows how a cable is wound onto the cable spool. And winding a cable onto the spool actually requires three people. So one person, this is Zach, need to spin this spool. Another person guide this cable and need to swing from left to right to get a uniform placement of cable onto the spool. We need another person to unwind this cable from a coiled cable, as the coiled cable is not always perfectly coiled. We need another person to organize this cable and unwind this cable from the coil. And so once the cables are prepared onto the rack, we preload the sleeve on the sleeve application tube. And then we gather all the cables from the spools and group them to form a bundle. And in the first section of 1.5 meter long bundle, we wrap them with anti-static wrap. And On the bundle, this section will not be covered with sleeves, as this section eventually n need to make it free and to connect to the either the CRP or to the flange. So this will have to be individual wires. In the final installation, we remove all the wraps, get the cables out, make the connection. And starting from 1.5 meter from the end, and then we attach the sleeve onto the bundle and secured with glass tape, and then we pull this cable bundle and along with the sleeve. So the sleeve will be applied over the cable bundle to form a bundle. And in this process, we also need that maybe three or four people. One, we need to fit the cables into the into the cable inlet from the plate, and to make sure there's no cable is kinked. So the other person will need to pull the cable bundle with the sleeve. Sometimes this person or a second person will need to make sure this sleeve will come with the bundle, as the cable sleeve is tended to be gripping onto the onto this tube. So you have to push this sleeve, so make sure that there's some sleeve available at this location to go with the cable bundle. And another person right now is needed to organize this cable bundle onto the table. But eventually, when if we have some cable rail or some other places to organize the cable bundle, and may be useful to have a cable rail at the end, so we don't need to worry about how to organize these cables. But anyway, at the CSU, they have plenty space. The cable bundle just laid onto the table. Yeah, that's also fine. And okay, so that is the first cable bundle we made, and in the first day, and the second day we made another cable bundle. And the other thing is in this trip is Jim and Nick bring their components to make a ladder cable tray for the cable bundles. And in this ladder cable tray, they use two stainless steel rope and with some FRP runs. The distance between two runs is 1 meter, and the runs are secured onto the rope with the wire rope stoppers. And these stops are crimped onto the wire. This is the gigantic crimping tool to make the installation. And on the right side, this is a finished ladder cable tray, and it's secured onto the table with some C clamps, so it stay on the table. And so the last one is we made the second day we made another cable bundle, so we have two cable bundles. In the design, four cable bundle will be mounted on one cable tray. The cable tray length is around 12 to 14 meters, and the cable bundle is 27 meters, so we can actually use two cable bundles, just fold them into to form four sections. So that's why we actually mount the four sections of cable bundle onto the cable tray. And the cable bundle are secured onto the cable tray with cable ties, and some extra length is formed between two cable runs to accommodate the thermal expansion mismatch. And so it goes to the last slide, the summary. So in this trip, we made two cable bundles using the design, the cable bundle assembly station. And we also made one ladder cable tray. In this test, we found some issues. And first is the winding the cables onto the spools. It's actually very time consuming. As for one of the for one CRP bundles, there will be six, at least this six CE cables, six CE data cables, six CE power cables. So there's 12 cables, and in one bundle we need one spare cable, data cable, one spare power cable. That is another two cables. So there will be 14 cables need for one cable bundle. We have to wind the 14 cables onto 14 spools. That takes a lot of time. And another issue is that without the brake mechanism, the cables on the spool may unwind itself due to their own weight. So when the cables pulled out from the spool, if the cable sag onto the ground, that section of cable from the spool to the ground, that section of cable, the weight is enough to drag the spool to start rolling. If the rolling start, and it will not stop until all the cables unwinded from the spool. And so that's let us think about we have to have some brake mechanism included into this rack design. And we also found Chenju have had another idea, is just to put some table or some table in front of the spool rack. And so that will reduce the length from the spool to the ground. Now it's to the desk, to the table. And then to reduce the length of cable, reduce the weight of the cable. And so if the weight reduced, that force will not be enough to pull this cable from to start rolling. Another issue finally is that the cables will fit very tightly into the tube. We need some force to push these cables through the tube. We also tried to use some fish stick to pull this cable bundle through the tube instead of pushing. And it worked. And but maybe the CSU proposed another idea. I will talk about later. To eliminate this issue. And so some improvement that CSU plans to make is first is going to design a special fixture for winding the cables onto the spool. So this fixture will have some handle. You could just crank the fixture and it will speed up the process of winding cables onto the spools. A second improvement is to include the brake design, a brake mechanism onto the cable spools. Then that's where eliminate the possibility of unwinding the cables by itself. And another improvement CSU is planning to do is to instead of feed the cables through the close the tube, they propose to split this 8 feet long tube along its axis, so it makes two halves, and that's allow people to open the tube, and this will allow we can directly place the cables into the tube and then close the tube. So that's eliminate the needs to push or. And this actually also eliminates the need of stacking the connectors, as the connectors make the bundle bigger. So we have to stagger the cable connectors so the bundle can go through the tube. But if the tube can be opened, and then there's no need to stagger these connectors. And this is what I remember from this test. Maybe I forgot to mention some, you know, some points, and some other people may remind me. You can add your comments. Thank you. That's all I have for this talk.
Okay, thanks. Let's see, comments, questions?
So maybe I'll start with the last point. I think the split tube is a great idea, but I don't think it will eliminate the need to stagger the connector a little bit, because we still need to push the in, you know, pull the sleeve, right? Preload the sleeve, and that need to go to a connector. If you have a big bulky connector on one end, it's very going to be very hard to pull the sleeve over it. So I think there will be a little bit of staggering, but maybe not as much as we need it. Right now, the first connector and the one in the it could be as far as you know 12 inches for us to be able to slide the connector in.
Yes, thank you. That's right.
Yeah. So Dave Warner, maybe how about anything, your thoughts from the CSU side?
Well, first of all, thank you all very much for coming out. It was really kind of you to come out, and I think we made an awful lot of progress earlier out there. I think, pardon me, we captured pretty much everything. I think that there were a few ideas that we had for how we might improve the assembly of the cable tray that we didn't talk about in this, but maybe that's not appropriate for this particular meeting, but there were some ideas we had for that. But there was one other thing that I would I'd bring out that we are still going to think about here at CSU a little bit. For a couple of reasons, we wound up wanting to remove the sleeve from the cable bundle from the first time that we made the first bundle, and then we
Dave, you're
wanted.
very kind. You can say that, you know, change you messed up and accidentally cut one of the cable bundles.
I don't think it's relevant for what I'm trying to say, but sure.
Okay,
We learned an important lesson that we need a better cutting tool for the cutting the sleeve when it's already around the bundle. But the point is that what we learned that was really interesting from that is that if you can pre-make the bundle before you pull it into the before you try to pull it into the sleeve, and if you have enough room to lay that out beforehand rather than trying to pull them off the reels into the tube, that really seemed to speed things up a great deal. I noticed that Chengju and Manhung went ahead and made the second bundle in you know, I think it was about an hour and a half. It was extremely fast when you made that second bundle, having first laid them out. We had the idea that we're going to take a look into making like a essentially a gutter from a house that would be shaped that would allow us to lay the cables out in the tray first, bundle them together with some tape, and then pull them through the sleeve afterwards. And from what I saw, that looked like an extremely attractive option for maybe even speeding this up a little bit. And given the amount of space that we have available to do this, I think we might be able to do that. So that was the one other thing that I wanted to mention. We might be able to eliminate that whole re-reeling and pulling everything off the reels step, which I think might make life even a little bit easier. But all in all, I would say that the tools that you guys came with worked like a charm, and that everything was I feel very confident that this can be made to work essentially the way that we tried this out.
Yeah, so Manhunt's the rack design was initially have in mind for places that have less smaller lab space. I think for CSU, you guys have the flexibility, that huge area. So I think you certainly have other possibility you should definitely explore. But maybe for you might want to mention to people in this group here just about the clean room. I mean, you guys saw the assembly. What we did, the prototype, but the final assembly production will actually be done in a very nice clean room. I don't know if you want to talk about it, Dave.
No, I can just say that this space that you see us working in here is in the last stages before we build a Visqueen clean room over this space that will be done probably by March that we'll be using for testing photon detector modules. But there's enough room in the clean room that we're making to be able to house this in a class 100,000 clean area. So we want it. Yeah, this was just the warehouse space that we are going to be assembling the clean room space in. Thank you for reminding me, Chenju. And one thing that was kind of clever, I like it. My mechanical engineering student who designed this came up with the idea of building the walls of the clean room out of pallet storage shelves. So we should have a great deal of storage inside there, so which should help us to be able to make the to store all of this stuff as we take it apart. And of course, we are only a 5-hour drive away from the lab, so putting these things together and then shipping them. And I think the idea would be, as was shown in I think the last picture that Chengju show, that Menhong showed. I think we would. The idea would be that we would mount these cables plus ideally and I think virtually certainly the photon detector cables onto the tray and reel it up onto the reel so it would ship completely assembled and ready to take apart and reassemble. So I think there was a lot of really good progress that was made in this, and again I really thank you guys for coming out.
Sounds
Yeah.
very good. So will there be another step before, assembly, I mean, before production of these bundles starts?
There's a little bit more prototyping we're going to do if that's what you're asking, Dave. We're going to try this idea of the gutter and you're laying it out. We've got materials to make two more cable bundles,
Okay,
flexibility.
that's what I thought I remembered. That's what I was getting at.
Yeah, and so yes, the idea is we'll do those too, and then we'll mount them up onto the cable tray and then ship them over to CERN. And I think that the goal is going to be to try to ship them over to, well, I don't really know what the date is yet when those need to be over at CERN. That seems to be a little bit movable, but probably late February, I'm thinking we need to have this stuff over at CERN based on what I'm seeing from Jim recently.
Yeah,
This
so
is
but
for the cable mock-up.
to answer Dave, your question is there is another step that we'll need to demonstrate. This is, we demonstrate we can build the cables, we demonstrate we can put it on the cable tray, but eventually they need to be rolled up in a giant rear. Now, we don't have the reason we haven't done that on this trip, the factories in India is making the rear for us right now. They'll probably be delivered in late January or early February. So at that point, hopefully we have four 27 meter cable bundles plus the PD cables, and then we'll do a full integration, and then we'll go through the exercise of trying to roll it up onto, I mean, the rear is huge, so like 1.5 meter diameter, and we're going to need to go through the exercise of doing that as well. And that is the assembly we're going to ship to CERN for the Building 185 integration test.
Sounds good. Okay, questions or comments from anyone else?
So I have one point. It's actually related. So there's a risk workshop this morning, and we're discussing various risks, but there's one discussion that's very much relevant for the group here. And so the risk was about the noise that some of you may know that for the bottom CRP, the CRP consortiums are planning to change the installation procedures. So instead of installing the full-size CRP, 3 meter by 3 meter, the new scheme is installing it in half units of half CRP. And there are some grounding issues that we need to worry about. But the upshot is, and then one of the proposals that people are floating around, in fact, that it came from Marco Fusaci, is that we may want to have separate SHV cables for each half of the CRP. So right now, what we have, for the CSU folks, you remember there's one cable bundle with SHV cables and the other one doesn't. And that is because we buy as one half of the CRP, then there's a kind of daisy chain, a short patch that goes to the second half of the CRP. And Marco is proposing we may want to consider eliminating that patch and bring another four cables down. But I'm bringing it up just to let you know that depending on the test, the Cobox results of the Cobox tests, if we run into noise problem, then we may need to do that. But if the Cobox results noise looks good, we may stick with the current bias scheme. So.
So this would let you separately bias the planes, the grid, and then what U and X planes
We're
on
not.
two CRUs rather than jumpering across, or what?
That's right. But we don't. There's no plan to buy another set of power supply. The cost is like 700K if we want to buy, bias each half separately. So the idea is more for grounding point of view, because if we really want to isolate the two CRPs, and then. Right now, the only part that's not really kosher is the bias line, right?
Okay. And in this case, the bias lines for the two CRUs would just come from the same power supply channels outside. And so it'd be the one cable going to the flange, or either even two cables going to the flange, but in any event, going to the same power supply channel, but then separating and being parallel cables all the
That's
way
right.
down.
That's right. And by the way, we have enough, right, for the vertical drift. We're only using one filter box. The other
Right.
one we could, in principle, instrument. Now, there is another added advantage of this way, because the CRP consortium is trying to figure out how to install that jumper cable, that from one cold filter box to the other. Once if you do one CRP and another CRP, at some point you kind of
Right.
lock
There wasn't
in.
any obvious way to actually get a person to where he
Exactly.
needed to be to access the filter box.
That's right. So, or they can pre-install. So it just, if we, of course, there's some additional cost and some engineering that need to go in, but it does solve some problem. And from the grounding scheme point of view, is cleaner than what we than just jumping across. So, yeah. So it's something we should explore. I mean, I So the conclusion of the risk workshop is that I was asked to put in a risk, and then so there'll be budget that's parked there in case we need to go forward with it. So.
Okay. If I mean, so when do you think we can actually try that in the NPO4 cold box? Probably. I mean, not until we do something with feet and all the rest of that stuff.
Well, I think for if you're referring to MPO2, never, right? I don't think
No, I
there's.
was referring to the MPO, sorry, two cold box. Cold box.
Okay, sorry. So it's MPO2, the CRP cold box.
Yes.
I don't know what the schedule is. Steve Cattell is on the line, may have better feeling.
So we'll try a conventional test of a new CRP anode towards the end of February, and then I guess it's maybe technical questions for exactly what the sequence is after that. I mean, we may try to put feet on, turn upside down, and rotate from CRP into CRUs. In one or more steps. And, I guess we could change the bias at that point too. I don't know how many steps that should be, but that could be sometime later, right? I don't know when all of the technical issues will be resolved. Could be March, April. I don't know.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. As usual, we're using up all the time easily. Josh volunteered to not give a presentation, but to give a verbal update on what's happening with the PTC.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Yeah, sorry, Adrian could not make it today. So just to let people know, so that we have almost the entire kit for the 160 PTCs, which was the original CD3A, I think it was. Still a few small R's and C reels that need to come in. There's some thermal material we use to connect the heat sinks, which is low in stock, but maybe we could find another one. And this does not need to be ready for any assembler. It's just the kind of thing we would probably do during QC to apply the heat sinks. The 90 PTCs for the vertical drift, whatever it's called, FT2 or one now. But there are long lead times on the DC to DC converters. Mouser and DigiKey have some availability in May, so there might be a little delay. And we need about 630 of those. And then some of the larger tantalums go in and out of stock. But that we're just keeping on top of that. Gonna need to change the front panel drawing because there was this change in position to the serial port to accommodate the rotate this, maybe people don't remember, but we change the layout to rotate some inductors so that the heat flow through the board would be better, and it seems to have worked. Anyway, having doing that, we had to change a position of one of the serial port connectors, which means we have to change the front panel. There are four more of these final version PTCs, 4As, I guess they're called, are almost done, almost totally assembled at Penn. So two were done before the holiday, and two are being finished now. And they'll be tested here before we send them out to people who are looking for them. And then we still need to discuss how we're going to do the QC here and what tests we need, what local hardware to do the tests we'll need. But the code and other support will be done here. And if we can get time from a student, a grad student to help, we will do that. But that may be tough. I think that's it.
Okay. Thank you. Questions from anybody? Okay, Chingju, do you want to just do I don't know if you prepared anything actually written, but you want to just sort of give everybody the lowdown on, what's going to happen in the next basically month and a half or and then vision beyond that at CERN?
Sure. Actually, let me. Roger's on the line. You want to give an update about that one? Since I am actually trying to multitask right now.
So, three things right now, I think. On the APA cold box side, we had done the cold box test of two production APAs a couple months ago, but there were some issues with the test results for each of them. And so we plan to do some further investigations and adjustments with these over the next few weeks, now that everybody's back, and then to retest at least one of them, depending on how things go, and see if we can get good results. On the MPO4 side, don't think we have any active plans, any plans to do anything particularly active with that. We still just have all the monitoring data going. with the emptying completed. On MPO2, there's some more things to do. I think the MPO2 filling resumed very recently. I'm not sure when exactly it's expected to be topped up, but the bottom electronics have been submerged for a while, and so we can do whatever noise or calibration tests we want with those over the coming weeks.
Current expectation is that we'll be topped off, fully topped off by early next week.
That's good. And so then with that, we can do joint tests with the top electronics as well, presumably. And well, we'll see how all of that goes. For MPO2 as well, we'll plan to do a lot of the same tests and setting scans that we did with MPO4. But if anyone has any particular suggestions for things to look at that we didn't look at with MPO4, then those will be welcome as well.
So, Roger, one thing I don't think we did a very systematic studies yet is the noise study with the PD system. Since it's fully immersed, they should be able to turn things on more freely now. Well, Dave Warner is no longer on the line, but we should talk to Dave and Peter about, and also Manuel if he's still online to do that test.
Okay, then. So relatively soon after the NPO4 cold box test, you say testing at least one of the APA 14, 15. They're also supposed to decide on a schedule for sending at least two more APAs in of the sort of newest batch to CERN. And I'm trying to remember what Eric told us. Well, they haven't made the decision. They'll make that decision within a matter of days. But is it Chengdu? Do I remember correctly that they're sort of aiming at sort of end of February for that? I remember it was when we weren't sure we were going to have anybody there.
Well, I think the plan is to test AP. I mean, we need to coordinate with the APA. Try to do the test of the first APA around the time of the collaboration meeting. The most likely one is APA 15, since that's already cabled up, and
Right.
then try to have APA 14 inside the APA cobot before. Roger leaves.
Okay, so that's right. So the plan is then, or the hope is that both of the APA 14 and 15 will be retested.
That's right.
APA 14, I believe, has a broken wire that they need to repair before it goes back in.
Yep, that's right.
APA 15, we have at least one front-end motherboard, one or two front-end motherboards that need to be replaced.
Not we don't know. It's likely loose cable connection. We need to check. But APA 15, there's also some funny debris, right? We think there's a debris between the wires that's giving us very high noise. So they need to look into that as well. In fact, I think we have photo. The compliance office had a photo showing something lodged between the wires.
Right.
Sorry, this is the wires on where? Sorry, I'm sorry.
This is the one of the APAs that was tested in the cold box most recently.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
And I mean, in fact, that one is the one that's still in the cold box, right?
Yep.
And so when is the plan when is it planned to open the cold box then?
Either this week or next week. But
Yeah.
next week, Pip and I will both be there.
Okay.
Dave, I think you're right that that Eric did say something about testing the second APA towards the end of February. I mean, there's also the we expect the new CRP in the NPO2 cold box also, in the last half of February.
Yep.
Okay, well, so there will continue to be things that we need to cover at CERN, almost continuously.
Yeah, that's right. I think we need to start reaching out to people to see people interested in being out there for extended period of time.
Okay, well, I don't know. Do we have anything else? Anyone? Is there going to be a WIB meeting today, Roger?
No, not today.
Okay.
Is there any news on either the ground bounces or the disconnected collection plane on APA-1 now that the detector has been drained?
We haven't tried anything since the detector's been drained. I'm not sure if there is much to try other than open up and go in to see eventually.
Okay.
Okay. Any last words from anyone? If not, we'll continue to communicate by email, as we sort of get more advanced in planning the collaboration meeting parallel sessions. I don't know whether we'll have a meeting next week. I'm kind of thinking not. I kind of think that next we'll be at the collaboration meeting, but keep in touch by email. Okay. Bye-bye.